Hey guys, welcome to Lords of Order, DC's Dr. Fate fan podcast. I'm your host, Ed Moore, and beware, there will be spoilers. If you want to get in touch, you can go to the website, bigtimenoise.com/Dr. Fate, and leave a comment. The Dr. Fate fan podcast at gmail.com is the email address. Lords of Order and Teal Productions are both on Facebook. Teal Productions is also on Twitter and Blue Sky. Any of those ways are ways to get in touch with me. Probably Twitter and Blue Sky will be the fastest, if that's your concern. Now, we're looking at All-Star Comics issue number 70 with an on-sale date of October 18th, 1977. This particular issue can be found reprinted in Justice Society, the second volume from 2007, DC Comics. Showcase presents All-Star Comics from 2011, all these are DC Comics, and All-Star Comics Only Legends Live Forever hardcover from 2019. Now, this is brought to us by writer Paul Levitz, penciler Joe Staton, inker Bob Layton, letterer Ben Oda, and colorist Jerry Serp, or Serpy, I'll say Serp. Now, the cover on the left-hand side, going down probably about 85% of the page or so, is the roster bar of who can be found in, presumably in the Justice Society of America. The title is All-Star Comics Presents the Legendary Justice Society of America. Those members present are Dr. Fate, Green Lantern, Flash, Star-Spangled Kid, Wildcat, and the Huntress, according to the sidebar. Now, that leaves out quite a few, as we'll see when we get inside. The cover itself: you have interfered with the strike force, now prepare to be executed. Some dude in the middle back of the cover says, pointing a rather nasty-looking gun at Wildcat and Star-Spangled Kid that are chained up, maybe both chained to the wall. While above and behind the dude with the gun, Huntress is dropping in through a hole in the room, saying, not if the Huntress can help it, believe me, I can. She swings in, about to kick him in the head, disarm him. All right, now we have the complete roll call is Bruce Wayne, Power Girl, Hourman, Dr. Midnight, Star-Spangled Kid, Superman, Hawkman, Dr. Fate, Wonder Woman, Wildcat, Robin, Green Lantern, Flash, and Starman. So, as a result of the previous chapter in the story, we have several members that are retired that have that were helping out. Hawkman is standing here with a gavel, pounding it on the table, saying, my friends, it's been a pleasure to serve as chairman of this large and happy reunion, but now I'm afraid I must reluctantly declare this meeting adjourned. And so everyone starts dispersing, you know, to the various aspects of their life that they have to get back to. We see mulling around, we see Bruce Wayne saying goodbye to Dr. Fate. Farewell, Bruce Wayne, and may we always meet in as pleasant circumstances, though I doubt the cosmic balance will grant that, says Dr. Fate. Next panel is Bruce kissing Power Girl on the forehead while his hands are touching her cheek near her lips. It's a really weird kind of look here. Bruce Wayne and Robin take off via some air transport, like those machines, you know, where you used to put mail in large, like, hotels and things, and the vacuum tubes would take it to the appropriate room, only it's doing it, like, with people. Next out is Wonder Woman saying hola, H-O-L-A. I didn't know Wonder Woman said hola, but she did here. Taking off. Next is Hawkman. He takes off. Dr. Fate takes off, leaving Power Girl, Flash, Green Lantern, Wildcat, and Star-Spangled Kid. But quickly, Green Lantern says he and Flash have to go, and we follow them outside as Green Lantern is taking up Flash on his offer to work for him, because Green Lantern Alan Scott's job with Gotham Broadcasting, that service has gone under, so it doesn't exist, so Alan Scott doesn't have a job. Barry said that Alan could work for him, and so he's going to do that in his guise as an engineer. So inside of the JSA headquarters are Star-Spangled Kid, Wildcat, and Power Girl. They don't see anything going on, but the monitors show that there's a bank being robbed, the Gotham National Bank, which we'll cut to here in a minute. But with nothing else to do, Power Girl leaves in a huff because she craves excitement or something. I don't know what her deal is, but she powers out. Get it? See what I did there? Power Girl. Yeah, okay. So we go to the Gotham National Bank, and we see that they are being held up by a group of outfitted. They're not armored, but they all are wearing the same outfits with helmets and some fancy-looking guns. A group called Strike Force. They've grabbed up the president of the bank. Yeah, I guess it's the president. But they feel that he's going to know the combination, and apparently he does, because they drag him downstairs to open up the big vault. Upstairs, a group of policemen, about six of them, break in, and they're trying to take out First Strike, but Strike Force. The members are calling each other number one, number two, number three, number four is how they refer to each other in Strike Force. But the members upstairs drive off the police, and the police, as they're leaving, they call for help. The police commissioner, who is not Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne is the mayor, I believe. No, I take that back. This is Inspector Corrigan, who I think we know as the Spectre, perhaps. But we haven't seen the Spectre. Maybe this is why. Call in standard assistance. They don't call for superheroes for a bank robbery, apparently. Cut back to the JSA headquarters, where we see the Star Spangled Kid and Wildcat playing checkers. Wildcat gets upset because he's lost for the sixth time, and he takes off. And Star Spangled Kid says, well, hang on, I'll go with you. And we see a shadow here that is bat-shaped, we're told, except for a figure in a bat-shaped cloak who steps forward from the shadows to reactivate the monitors. So, leaves you the impression that that's Batman that has snuck back in, but Batman has retired. He doesn't exist anymore. Robin doesn't dress like this. So, wonder who it could be. And actually, we do see some legs over here and the cape over in the corner of that panel casting the big shadow that we easily see. All right, the conventional Gotham police forces arrive here to back up the police. First Strike gets rid of them. Not like they did the police to continue what they're doing, but gets rid of them long enough to take off in some ultra-modern plexiglass assault spheres that they use. They look like giant pinball machine balls, only they're see-through. Then we have 5 pages of ads here. Is this the place? No, this is just 3 pages. Somewhere else, there's a 5-page break in the story for ads. I was really surprised there were that many all back-to-back. But I guess I do like that they will lump them together rather than story, ad, you know, alternating throughout. So at least you get kind of some continuity going in the story before they break it for the ads, which have their own continuity as well because it's a bunch of ads. So we see we are at Duffy's Tavern here, and Star Spangled Kid and Wildcat are in their civilian guises. Ted Grant and Star Spangled Kid, is his name Pemberton? Yeah, Sylvester Pemberton. And Sylvester's kind of bemoaning the fact that he's 18 years old, but he was born in 1926. And if the book, the setting for the book is contemporary, we're in 1977, and he was born in 26. So he's, what, 50 years old, but appears and has the mentality of an 18-year-old because he's been, I don't know if he's gone somewhere because of magic or something, or if the exposure that gave him his powers has retarded his aging, or I forget what it is. I should know because I'm reading the book, but I don't. Sorry. Ted Grant is saying something about himself, right? He's the former heavyweight champion, Ted Grant. That is this same dude. But somebody in the bar overhears and tells the guy to take back saying something disparaging about Ted Grant, even though they are one and the same. Nonetheless, a brawl starts here, fisticuffs, throwing punches. In the midst of it, Pemberton happens to catch a television and sees that the Gotham Bank is in rather disarray from where First Strike has taken off. So he grabs Ted and they head to the bank. Here is the 5-page break. And see, I took a break there too, talking about the story as I look through the ads. But I'll probably take that out of the podcast anyway, so you guys will never be able to tell. We see Star Spangled Kid grabbing Ted Grant, both of them now in uniform, and swishing off from inside the bar, or right outside the bar at street side. So I don't know how they managed to get out of the bar and change in front of the bar on the street. I would think they would have run around into an alley or something and changed and took off from there. But nope, right in front of the tavern is where the energy trail leads that Star Spangled Kid is leaving. They arrive at the bank. Is it at the bank? Or they're on the way to the bank and they encounter the spheres that First Strike have used to get away. And Star Spangled Kid hits them with some energy and starts bouncing them around like pinballs in a pinball game. Another ad break. Dude. So they break up the spheres, Wildcat and Star Spangled Kid, and the soldiers pour out and start taking shots at them. Ted is knocking them out with his fists. Star Spangled Kid is melting the weapons or causing them to break apart or whatever, you know, with his various forms of energy that he has. Till he gets too close to one of the First Strike dudes, and the dude is able to grab him and finds out that he has electroshock gloves on. So he knocks out Star Spangled Kid that way. Everyone else focuses their attention on Wildcat, and they're able to overcome him that way by just sheer numbers. So now First Strike leaves in the remaining intact spheres with Star Spangled Kid and Wildcat as captives now. We cut to, hey, the namesake for the podcast, Dr. Fate. Almost as fast as a wind-borne sorcerer just now reaching his stone tower in ancient Salem. A tower with no doors or windows, and some say no mortal builder. So he phases through the walls like he is able to do, but Inza is just beside herself because, come to find out, the residual energy that she has from interacting with Dr. Fate apparently has burnt off, and she is not able to leave the tower like she has in the past. So she's been stuck here for however long. Hey, don't bother my mic. For however long he's been gone, she's been trapped in the tower. And if that wasn't bad enough, she says, "That thing appeared." And she points kind of at us off the page. And then Nelson turns and looks. And Kent turns and looks and says, "By the crystal orb of Naboo." Narrator tells us, "At this point, a curtain must be drawn over these events, for we mortals are not permitted to know the ways of fate. At least, not yet." We cut to the Gotham Stadium, which was recently rebuilt, and the contractors built Criminal Hideaway in the bottom, without anyone knowing. They were bought off, I would assume. Star Spangled Kid and Wildcat are waking up here just as Huntress joins them. She says she's there to help them get out, but Wildcat's like, "No, I don't want to get out. I want to even the score." Before they can do anything, First Strike shows up with all their fancy schmancy weapons here, and there's some talking back and forth about story points. "Unfortunately, it does not fit in with our plans, young lady. We had hoped to use your friends to secure a rather large ransom from the city, but since they're conscious, I'm afraid we'll just have to settle for killing you." And the final panel is the leader, number one, but in his goggles that he's wearing, you can see reflected our three heroes. It's kind of a cool little way to do things. Next issue, the showdown with the Strike Force, the secret of the thing in the tower, the origin of the Huntress, all in The Deadliest Game in Town. On sale last week in November, in December. So this came out the 18th of October. And then that book is scheduled to come out the 27th of December, which is, that's kind of interesting because that's about when I am recording this. I'm recording this on the 26th. So that is what, 47, almost 47 years ago exactly. Hey, that's pretty cool. And then we just finish out with the letters page and direct currents and then a couple ads and we're done. That reminds me, Direct Currents. I've been reading back issues of the Comics Journal, and it's interesting to see those bulletin blurbs from both Marvel and DC, and they've recently started independent comics, which basically is anything not Marvel and DC at the time. I'm into 1978, I think. I bought a digital subscription to their back issues, and I've been reading through them just whenever it strikes me. I don't want to read comic books, but I want to read something. And fascinating reading those old news articles and the ads. I like the interviews of creators, because Gary Groth was kind of, or Groth was kind of a shitster, if we will. He would ask questions knowing that they weren't going to be pleasantly answered, and he would write down the answers and pass it on. It's interesting reading. The story, not much Dr. Fate in this one. I haven't read ahead. I don't know if it picks up since we have been given a story thread for him in the next issue. I do know that there's probably only 3 or 4 issues of All-Star Comics left. Let's see here real quick. Yeah, we're about to get into Adventure Comics. So All-Star Comics only has, I think it only went to like 73, 74. So this is issue 70. We're about to move yet again to keep up with Dr. Fate. And hopefully you guys will move around and keep up with me keeping up with Dr. Fate. And, well, that's all the keep up. I can't stretch that out anymore. But thanks for listening in, guys. Leave me some feedback. I'll talk to you next time. Ciao.